Okay, so page 17, there is a solution. At the very top of the page, I wrote the body stops here because we spoke about the allergic reaction to alcoholism, the first symptom of alcoholism. It's the only symptoms that makes me alcoholic because if I didn't have the allergy to alcohol, I could drink three or four and stop. But it's the allergy that gives me that continuation, that thirstiness to drink, right? So I wrote at the top of the page, the body stops here. Because now we're going to start talking about the mind. The next day, I wrote the mind and malady, because malady is a sickness, a mental sickness that we suffer. So I'm going to read. It starts off with We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who are just once as hopeless as Bill. And I underline this next sentence. It says, Nearly all have recovered, they solved the drink problem. All right, because the chapter is there's a solution. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people that would normally not mix, right? So what it's telling us, it's telling us straight away that it's open to everybody. Whether you're black, white, whether you're yellow, whether you're an atheist, a non-believer, whatever, whatever your political, religious beliefs are, this solution is open to every single person, providing you're willing enough. It says, we are people who would normally not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding, which I underlined this, which is indescribably wonderful. Because everybody on the meeting today, we all have a connection. We all have the same problem and the same solution. So many of you that I connect with, we have a laugh and we have banter, but we have that common solution, that common bind, that common ground, right? It says, we are like the passengers of a great liner, the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy prevailed the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside and we go our individual ways. And when Bill brought this up, it's about the Titanic. And when you talk about the steerage section, it was the low-class people that had no money that sat in the bottom. And then you got the captain's table, which were the penguin suits and the dicky bow ties. And when the ship was sinking, the black guy with all the dungarees and no money stood at the top of the ship to jump. And next to him was a guy with a penguin suit, a rich guy. And when both of these guys held their hands and they jumped in that cold, icy water together, they had one common problem. They were going to doubt, they were going to die, and they were going to drown. And they pulled each other to ship to safety. But once they went into dock, the two guys separated, went their own separate ways. The rich guy went back to his family, and the other guy went back to where he came from. But it says, unlike us, we have a bond that always ties us together. So it doesn't matter if I don't see Hermione for 6 months or 9 months or a year. Our relationship does not change. We're still pleased to see each other with Sharon, with Karen, with Jax. We're all the same. Doesn't matter how long we're apart, we're always going to have that common bond. And I highlighted this next from here, the feeling down to the end of the page. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. That in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. They're talking about the problem, right? We've all got that common problem. And then it follows up with the tremendous fact and underlines for every one of us, not some of us. This is a solution for every single one of us. That we have discovered a common solution. The two parts that bind us together was the problem that held us together, we're now joined, and now the solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree, not half measures, right? Upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And next to that, I wrote page 58. Because on 58 will give us a warning if we don't take it. So it's told us on the bottom of the page is a common solution that we've got. And the top of 18, it says an illness of this sort, and we become to believe it an illness. It involves those about us in a way that no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him. No one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. And I highlight this next sentence. For with it, from alcoholism, goes annihilation. All things worthwhile in life. We affect everybody and everything. Our finances, our health, our wealth, our families, our workplace, the bank manager. It engulfs whose lives who touch the sufferers. It brings fierce misunderstanding, fierce resentment, and financial insecurity. Disgusted friends and employers, warped lives, blameless children, sad lives and parents, anyone can add to increase the list. It's exactly what it does. We affect everybody that comes into our path, but not so with the person that got cancer, because everyone's sorry for them. But they don't destroy people's lives like we do, because we're selfish and self-centered. It's always about us, right? It says, we hope this forum will inform and comfort. It's going to teach you what the problem is, and it's going to teach you what the solution is. Inform and comfort those who are or may be affected, and underline this, there are many. There are many of us that are affected with the illness. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us has found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. How many people have gone to the doctor and we've lied about our drinking? How many units you drinking, keeper? I'm doing 2 a week. It's affecting my life and my finances. But another alcoholic can sit with you and you're going to tell him the truth. Because we understand each other, right? So strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist or the doctor, because we can't reveal ourselves. The embarrassment, the shame, and the guilt. And I highlighted this but the ex-problem drinker all the way down to the bottom of the page. It says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, this is the sponsor, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, underlined it. They've recovered, right? They know the problem, they know the solution, they know the way out. They've been rocketed to that fourth dimension of existence. Can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, and underline this, little or nothing can be accomplished. And next to that, I wrote step 12. Because when I'm working with that newcomer, we need to get that identification. We need to get them comfortable to talk with us without reserve. But the doctors and the wives and the family can't get that information from us. But when I'm talking to another alcoholic who tells me their story in step 12, their 12-step work, and tell me how bad it was, how it affected their lives, and get the identification. And then I'm going to reveal myself to another person. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about. That his whole deportment shouts at a new prospect, and underline this, here is the man with the real answer, or woman. That has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever to except the sincere desire, underline this, to be helpful. Our 12th step. There are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. And that's why we carry the message. Because when we look at step 12 in a few more weeks' time, this is what ensures immunity from drinking. Working with another alcoholic, one-on-one. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. None of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would it be increased if we did. And I highlighted from we feel down to occupations and affairs, four lines, highlighted. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, because the work starts next. We're going to go through detox. This is when it starts. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us, underline that, not some of us, all of us, spend much of our time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. And that's what Frank did. My sponsor, Frank, was retired. He could sponsor people through the day. But we've always talked at the very beginning, your recovery starts from the fireside out. Make sure you're right at home, the wife and the kids and the husband and the family and the finances. Get that right. If we keep on the way we are going, there's going to be little doubt that much good will result. But the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us living in large cities are overcome with the reflection close by, and I underlined this, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Every single day. This is explaining the importance of us carrying a message in step 12, right? Many could have recovered if they had the opportunity that we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so free given us with a question mark? How do we present it? How do we sit the newcomer down and explain what we've got? And we lay out what our life is like. When we 12-step people, we tell them our story, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And then we give them hope, right? I highlight this little next paragraph down to drinking problems about five lines. We have concluded to publish an anonymous volume. Once you've highlighted this, underline setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. And I underline this next sentence as well as highlight it. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. So when people say it's a suggested program of recovery, we suggest you take it or you don't. You live or you die. Next to that, you can write page 25, because that's going to come up in a minute. Sorry, 24. That's going to come up in a minute. Of necessity, there will have to be a discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, or religious. Which means when I'm going to sit down and interview the sponsee, I need to know your religious leanings, your political beliefs, your drinking story. Frank always put this down as an interview. When I'm going to interview the sponsee to work with, I need to know what you believe in. Do you believe or are you willing to believe? What's your religious leanings? We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing will please us so much as to write a book which will contain no basis for contention or argument. We should do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that our real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions and attitudes, which make us more useful to others. And I highlighted now from our very lives the whole page, right? Just did a whole page, got a little box around the whole thing, right? It says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers, talking about the one that's got the solution, depend on our, and underline this, constant thought of others and how we may help their needs. You may already ask yourself, why is it that some of us come so very ill from drinking? Doubtless you are curious to discover, and underline this, the how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Because the doctors didn't say we could recover. Dr. Silkworth, Carl Jung, they didn't know we could recover. But we witnessed that. We experienced that. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, and underline this, what do I have to do? It's a chapter called There's a Solution. You're going to 12-step someone. You're going to lay out the solution to the problem they've got. Tell them about the power that they lack. It's the purpose of this book to answer such questions, underline this specifically, which means we're going to go into depth on it. We should tell you what we have done before going into a detailed discussion. It may be well to summarize some points as we see them. How many times has someone said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? This is the normal person's view, right? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try a beer and wine and lay off the hard stuff? His willpower must be weak. If he could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. That's what normal people think of us. Why don't you just stop? Why don't you step two or three? What's wrong with you? Who said that one? What is wrong with you? Now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear from all the time. Back of them is a world, and I underline this, of ignorance and misunderstanding. And it's not their fault. They just don't understand it. They just can't get the identification that we get. We see these expressions refer to people whose reactions and underlinings are very different from ours. It's going to give us three examples of drinkers. It says the moderate drinker has little trouble giving up liquor entirely if they have good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. And let me tell you, there's people like that in AA. We all know that, right? It then says we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative or important, this man can also stop and moderate, underlined it. They can also stop and moderate a heavy drinker, right? Although he may find it difficult and troublesome, and may even need some medical attention or a detox. Some can do detox and stop. I'm going to talk about my drinking. So what about the real alcoholic? This is the guy that's powerless, or the woman that's powerless, that's lost the power of choice, which we're going to read in two pages. What about the real alcoholic? They may start off as a moderate drinker. They may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of their drinking career, they begin to lose, underline this, all control of their liquor consumption. Once he starts to drink, the first symptom of alcoholism, right? The allergy. Here is the fellow who's been puzzling you. Especially his, underline this, lack of control. We just read that on the page prior, right? She's such a sweet girl, he'd give up for her sake, right? He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He's a real Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, underlined it. Because I'm not the same person when I've got a drink in me. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He's always more or less insanely drunk. And underlined his next sentence. Underlined it. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world. You let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. That's me. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. When I'm going to go out. The wife says, we're going to go out at six. I said, yeah, I'll have one drink and I'll be ready. Forget that. Particularly when some important decision must be made or an engagement kept. And I highlighted the next two lines. He's often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor. Because without a drink, we're different people. The Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde. But in that respect, he's incredibly dishonest and selfish. I underlined them. Them are defects, right? I'm dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes. And has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself. And then he pulls the structure down on his head and underlines this by a senseless series of sprees. Here's the fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated, ill to sleep the clock round. Yet early next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down a waste pipe. Who hasn't hidden their drink, stashed it somewhere, and then forgot? As matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. Then comes a day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to a doctor to give him some morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. You can write next to that detox so people don't get confused that we're addicts, right? He then begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums. This is by no means a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify us roughly. I highlighted now from why does he behave like this? To the bottom of the page. It says to the question, why does he behave like this? If 100 experiences have shown that one drink means another debacle, with all his attendant suffering and humiliation, which are underlined, why does he take that one drink? And next to that, I wrote powerless. because I've lost the power of choice. And underline that and then put insanity, because the insanity is what blocks out the consequences. So if I'm insane, I can't see the truth in how I drunk. I can't see the way I affected people. Why can't you stay on a water wagon? With a question mark. Because I can't see the wrong in it. I get restless, irritable, discontented if I took a drink. What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? Perhaps there will never be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We're not sure once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer the riddle. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We're equally positive, and I underline these next three lines, that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens. Both bodily and mentally, the two symptoms of alcoholism there, right? Bodily and mentally. Which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. Now we're going to talk about the mind. All right? So on top of this, I wrote mind at the top of page 323. And I highlighted this next five lines, says rather than his body. So these observations will be academic and pointless. Right? Underline that. Academic and pointless. If our friend never took that first drink, it'd be pointless conversation. He never took that first drink. Therefore, setting a terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And next to that, we write obsession, insanity. Because the obsession is what's going to justify it. The insanity is what's going to block out the consequences. I can't see it, it's not wrong. The obsession will come in and say, well, this time it's going to be different. I'm going to have two or three and stop. We're in a conversation about the mind, right? If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, which makes sense, right? But none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of a man having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer. So that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated or refuse to talk. When you approach an alcoholic and ask him, what is your problem? Do you know what you did? We get irritated. We get a bit pissed off when we get confronted, right? Highlight now from once in a while to the bottom of the page. And underline this says, once in a while, he may try to suit the truth. And a truth, strange to say, is he usually has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. And the wife would ask me, why'd you do it? My answer was, I don't know. Because at that point, without knowing what alcoholism was, I didn't know why I kept doing it. I kept testing that experiment of the first drink. Some drinkers have excuses in which they are satisfied part of the time. But in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. And I underline these next four lines, they're important. It says, once this malady is sickness, right? So that once this mental sickness has a real hold, they're a baffled lot because we don't know why we do it. Cunning, baffling, powerful, right? There's the obsession. It's the first time we hear it. There's the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they're out for the count. First time we've heard the obsession, the justification, the denial, right? How true this is. Few realize in a vague way that their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal. But everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will rouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will. The tragic truth that the man be a real alcoholic, and underline this, a happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. top of that, you can just highlight ho the whole of 24, or just circle the whole of 24. We'll underline some words as we go through. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, underline that, every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. Underline that. I hear people say to the alcoholic, listen, get a month sober, then I'm going to sponsor you. How's that going to work? I'll read that again. At a certain point of the drinking of every alcoholic, which means we can't stop, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. We cannot stop. The tragic situation has already arrived practically in every case long before it's suspected. They all know I'm an alcoholic except me. I can't tell them to wait a month or 2 weeks. If they've got a problem they can't control, they've got a problem they're powerless, they need help. We need to get in the trenches and work with them. The fact that is that most alcoholics have reasons yet obscure, underline this, have lost the power of choice in drink. Next to that, I wrote step one, and powerless. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We're unable at certain times, this is important, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering of humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I cannot see it. It's insanity, right? There's your insanity. We cannot bring into our consciousness with sufficient force because I can't see it of even a week or month ago. We were without defense against that first drink. The almost certain consequences of that follow taking a glass of beer do not even crowd into the mind to deter us. Underlined it. Insanity, right? If these falls occur, they are hazily and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There's a complete failure. Underlined it. Complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from pointing his hand onto a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time. And here's how. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often has someone began to drink in this nonchalant way and after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sakes, how did I ever get started again? Only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I'll stop at the sixth drink or what's the use anyhow? Because once I've broken that sobriety, what's the point, right? The last four lines, underline these last four lines. When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, the mind and body, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. We are powerless. And unless locked up, he may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. Powerful stuff. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. And I highlighted this whole next page again, which is underlining. It says there is a solution. And this is the program. Almost none of us like the self-searching, step four, and leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which is a process required for its successful consummation, which is six and seven. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life that we've been living. When therefore we were approached by those who had the problem been solved, which is the sponsor, and underlined this, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, underlined it, a way out in which we can absolutely agree, right? For which we have not even dreamed. And underlined this, the great fact is just this and nothing less. We have a solution. You don't have to be like page 24. Page 25 is going to give you the hope that you need to recover. That we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows and towards God's universe. And I underline this next little paragraph, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous, because he solved the drink problem, right? He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. Next to that, I wrote recovered. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. Next to that, I wrote page 58. It gives us the warnings, right? Half measures avail us nothing. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we pass into the region from which there is no return for you who remain, and I underline these next four lines, we had but two alternatives. And I throw this out all the time. One was to go on to the bitter end. And people would say to me, Keith, how bitter is the bitter end? It's death, right? Blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other was simply to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to. Willing, right? And we were willing to make the effort. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. This is Roland Hazard, by the way. Then he had gone to Europe to place himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist, Dr. Carl Jung. He prescribed for him, though experience had made him skeptical, but he finished his treatment in unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, we believed he had acquired such, and underlined this, a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Bill Wilson said self-knowledge would fix him. On Bill's first visit to Towns Hospital, he learned about alcoholism or about the allergy. He said, now I know what I've got, I'm not going to drink. This is exactly what Roland did. Now I know what I've got, self-knowledge will fix it. He says, nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fault. So he returned to the doctor to whom he had admired and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems. Yet he had no control over alcohol. Why was it? Carl Jung worked with Roland Hazard worked with Carl Jung for a year. And after a year, Roland Hazard decided he was going to go back to his family. So he went back to Paris to spend a weekend in Paris and then he would jump on a ship and go back home to New York. But he got drunk in Paris and he went back to the doctor. And he asked him, why could I not stay sober? And this is what the doctor said. He said he begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless, underlined it. He could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion. But this man still lives and is a free man. He doesn't need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth, any other free man may go without disaster, without getting drunk, provided he remains willing to maintain, underline this, a certain simple attitude. Some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Let's tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with his doctor. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Our friend has felt as though the gates of hell would close on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? With a question mark. Yes, replied the doctor. There is, exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. I highlighted this next paragraph. Because this is what he said to him. He said, here and then, once in a while, alcoholics have had what we called vital spiritual experiences. And this is what they are. He says, to me, these occurrences are phenomena, an unexplained event. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacement and rearrangements, It's getting rid of old self, right? Our selfish self-centeredness, our defects, our ideas and emotions and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of these lives and these men, are suddenly cast to one side. When we do our steps 4 through 9, we cast out our old self and we find God, right? And a completely new set of conceptions and motives began to dominate them. Open-mindedness, love and peace, the Christian values. I'm going to read that again. Spoke about out with our old self, in with a new. And this is what he said. To me, the occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of these lives of these men, suddenly cast to one side. We're going to kick out alcoholism and we're going to recover from it. Then says, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. In fact, I've been trying to produce some of these emotional rearrangements within you. With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful. And I underline this next sentence. But I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that after all, he was a good church member. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctor telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in this case, it did not spell the vital spiritual experience. Here was a terrible dilemma in which our friend found himself when he had the extraordinary experience, which we have already told you, made him a free man. Ronan had that spiritual experience. He never drank again. We in turn sought the same escape, and underline this, with the desperation of drowning men. We're going to do or die. Next day, you can write page 25, the two alternatives, right? What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or, if you prefer, underline this, designed for living that really works. The distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book, The Writers of Religious Experience, indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there's only one way in which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that, and underline is, all of us, whatever our race, creed, and colour, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon a simple and understandable terms, as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try, underlined it. Those having religious affiliations will find there nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There is no friction among us with such matters. We think it no concern of ours that what religious bodies our members identify themselves as with individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair. We don't care what beliefs you've got. Whether it's God, whether it's Jesus, whether it's Buddha, we don't care. As long as you're willing to believe. With each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favour such memberships. In the following chapter, there appears to be an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it. Then a chapter addressed to the alcoholic. Many who were once in this class who are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find such convictions and those no obstacle for a spiritual experience. Further on, underline is clear-cut directions are given, showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual and his personal story is described in his own language, from his own point of view. The way he establishes his relationship with God, underline that, relationship with God. Because everything you do from the day you come to AA is about building a relationship with yourself, with God, with your family, rebuilding relationships. It's all about the relationship. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women, desperately in need, will see these pages. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. We're going to finish off with page 567. We're going to quickly do the spiritual experience. I can find it. Okay, if you've got the page 567, a spiritual experience is about a personality change or spiritual experience or spiritual awakenings. This whole two pages is about a change. You're going to read the word change. The term spiritual experience, which means the change, and a spiritual awakening, which means the change, are used many times in this book. Upon careful reading of the personality change, sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, has manifested itself in many different forms. It means we don't just get the flash of light. The educational variety or the spiritual awakenings we learn as time goes on, we have just slight changes for our recovery. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression to impress someone is to change. Of these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Upheave is to change something. Happily for everyone, this is erroneous, which means we can have different types. It's not got to be a spiritual flash of light experience. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our impression to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate, overwhelming God consciousness to change, followed by at once a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing fellowship, thousands of alcoholics, such transformations to transform is to change, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, which means we grow and we change over time. Because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. And we see that in a newcomer. We see him change over time, right? Because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before him himself. He finally realizes that he's undergone a profound alteration, which is the change, and his reaction, again, which is change, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With a few exceptions, our members find they have tapped into an unsuspected inner resource, underlined it. That voice within, right? Which they presently identify their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, I underlined all of this last sentence, this last paragraph. We wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by his attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with a spiritual program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, and these are indispensable. You need them. This last bit is from William, from Herbert Spencer, and it says, there is a principle or a rule. There is a bar against all information, which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. When you've gone through the program and you've recovered and got the experience, you can't deny it. Contempt rather to investigation. With that, recording's going to stop.